This is the Wheeler Centre podcast.
So my name's Bhakti Puvanantharan and I'm your chair this gorgeous autumnal afternoon in Melbourne. But before I introduce our well-travelled guests, I want to take a moment to acknowledge the traditional owners on the land which we're meeting on today, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. They gathered here for many centuries before us, so I think it's right that we pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and any Indigenous people here today as well. So now we turn to our guests and our topic today, which is comedy in India, and particularly in terms of freedom of speech and expression. Our three guests today are part of a brand new burgeoning industry in India. They're pioneers, really. And I think we'll start over at the other end here with Sapan. Sapan Verma is one of India's most popular and experienced stand-up comedians. He's co-founder of the East India Company, India's leading comedy collective, which has more than 500,000 followers and 80 million views on YouTube. Sapan is also the first Indian comedian to release a special on Amazon Prime Video, Obsessive Comic Disorder. And in 2016, he performed to a crowd of 80,000 people at the Global Citizen Festival India, where he opened for Jay-Z and Coldplay.
Yep.
Sapan has done over 800 live shows in the last 5 years. I'm trying to do the maths on that.
Wow, this is my biography. How did you get hold of this?
And not just in India, but in the US, in Europe, Japan, all over the world. So welcome to Sapan.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
In the middle is Neeti Palta. So Neeti actually had a career before comedy, didn't you, Neeti, as a in advertising, a very successful career, and now she is an English language stand-up comedian, and one that is sorely lacking. She brings a female perspective. She presents her unique point of view on a variety of subjects, from the life of women in India and Indian idiosyncrasies to daily irritants and current affairs. You do a lot of observational work. All the while indulging in a spot of poking fun at men, which is one of my favourite activities too. She has a background in writing, and her first full-blown Bollywood screenplay, O Theri, was released in 2014. Thank you for being with us, Neeti.
Thank you.
And immediately to my left is Daniel Fernandez. Daniel is one of India's leading English stand-up comedians. He's a regular at comedy venues across the country and has performed internationally at comedy festivals in the Netherlands, Singapore, Malaysia and Australia. I'm particularly fond of your political stuff, so I think we can talk about that a bit later as well, Daniel.
We can.
Thank you for being with us.
That's the introduction you have for me?
Yeah. That's what you wrote on the website.
Okay.
Go back and edit.
You're going to hold that against me for a while. Okay. Right. So, look, before I start, I need to confess that I myself am not Indian. I'm Sri Lankan Tamil. But I didn't want to tell the Wheelers into that in case they took away the gig, because I really wanted to talk to these guys. Now, you're in Melbourne. The festivals is the final weekend of the festival. And you've actually, all three of you have worked up quite a bit of material about Melbourne in your routines. Tell us how you came to write those jokes. Where did the inspiration come from?
From Melbourne.
Yeah. Yeah, but what did you find out about us in that process?
I think as a comedian, one of the things that you learn to do when you travel as often as we do is to find out the things that stand out, the things that remind you that you're not in your own country. And then find the humor in that, yeah. And I have about 5 to 7 minutes of material now on Melbourne. So.
And you can't even use it anywhere else. It's a bit of a waste.
I can probably see how it works back home. But for you guys watching right now, we have 2 more shows lined up. So I ain't dropping anything over here right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, we get our material by just finding out things that really stand out.
And you spend a bit of time, like, do you go out to cafes or, like, are you observing people in the street? What are you doing?
I think, yeah, just pretty much just, like, roaming around, walking around. It's just very small things that just come in the way, whether it's your... like Daniel has this brilliant bit about the plug points you have. Yeah. I have this bit about the coffee culture that you have.
Yeah.
Everybody has got different bits about. So it's not like you're consciously going out to look for jokes. Yeah. I think they just come to you.
Sometimes it's just the dichotomy between what people have told you to expect and what you do actually get here.
Yes.
Right, that's right. And I guess you probably also knew quite a bit about Australian comedy before you came here. I know the festival's done a roadshow in India before and so on. So what are the issues that you think Australian comics deal with well? And conversely, which ones do they deal with maybe not so well, in your opinions?
What I like about the Aussie comics that I've seen here is they're very politically inclined. They're not afraid to, take a stance on any issue. They're not trying to please people. They'll say what they feel, and it's funny. And I'm like, I need to do stuff like this back home. We try and do it back home. We're doing it. But I like how here, as a comedian, you can speak your mind.
Mm.
Freely.
Yeah.
And even as an audience, you're open to ideas and you're open to different opinions and not like, oh, you said something what I don't agree with, I will kill you right now. That doesn't happen here yet. So.
Not too many death threats in this festival. So that's encouraging.
None so far, so quite nice.
Neethi, what do you think about Australian comics?
Actually, I have a flip opinion about Australian audiences.
Okay.
Because I feel they're fairly politically correct. And the moment you do slightly edgy material or something that is a little dissonant from what they're used to hearing, like yesterday I heard a...
I think she just left the lights on at home. She just... Oh, my God.
Well, that's a really interesting thing that you bring up, because to me, I think in Australian comedy, probably the two biggest taboos are violence against women or rape, and also race jokes. Like that seems to be something that either is very difficult and worthwhile, or people just don't even go near it.
But I think it depends on who's telling the joke.
Correct.
So if it's a joke, if it's an Indian comedian, I think there's actually a Sri Lankan comedian doing a joke about race, which was so funny, but I think he has the license to do that joke.
Yeah.
I think even if you're a white comedian, it depends if you're punching up or are you punching down.
Mm.
So if you're punching up, then that's fine. If you're punching down on someone else, then yes, the audience will turn on you. And I think the Australian audience is evolved, fairly evolved. I mean, this festival's been around for 30 years now. So, you know...
But Neethi, you're saying that's like a politically correct... Like, that makes your life a bit harder as well.
Yeah, because, no, they were laughing, but they didn't know whether it was allowed to laugh at that or not. So you want to address it and say, it's okay, I'm poking fun at myself, you're allowed.
But I think I think one thing that needs to be addressed is a lot of the Australian audience is not used to seeing an Indian stand-up comedian from India.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I was here last year as well. So a lot of the audiences did not know what to expect. They thought I would do jokes about, curry... computers. Instead, I did jokes. I did jokes about Hitler, gun control, and the Syrian crisis. So they're like, it's not what they're expecting. So I think if you give it time, once they understand what Indian comedians are all about, I think the responses will change.
Right.
To be fair, I have one curry joke though.
I don't judge you for that. That's what the people want to hear. So. Okay, so going off that, race and violence against women is a taboo here. What are the big taboos in stand-up comedy there?
I think one thing that people are really a bit dicey talking about is religion, of course.
Mm.
And two, bit of politics, depending on how far you push the envelope. I think some basic stuff you can do, but of course, I think one of the biggest things that you just can't talk about is your national symbols, which is your national flag, your national anthem, and your freedom fighters, Indian freedom fighters like Mahatma Gandhi and Subhash Chandra Bose. That is, there's a law against that.
That's in the Constitution.
It's a law, I forgot what it is. I have it on the laptop. Prevention of Insults to National Symbols Act of 1971 or something.
Mm.
I've noted it down because I know that's the one I'll go to jail for. So I've noted it down. So that is something you just can't talk about. Mm. Religion and politics is something which is a bit tricky. You can do it in a safe space. But
again, it depends on the medium. Now, if you're at a comedy club where people have bought tickets to watch you, you can say whatever you want. We have really pushed the envelope over there, and I don't recall anything. I don't recall any major fallout because of that. Any trouble that we've gotten into in India has been because of content that's been released on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's literally like busking online. So you're exposing yourself to anybody who's not even your audience. And almost everyone who's taken offense to anything that they've seen in a comedy video online has almost always been people who would never come to watch a live show in any case.
It's a controlled environment versus somewhere where you can actually be taken out of context.
Yes,
mm-hmm. which is very important that quoting out of context happens very often. I'll give you a small example. We made one song 3-4 months ago about the demonetization that happened in the country. We banned currency in India. Yeah, in November. Yeah. So we did a song called Narendra Modi's song, which was about the prime minister of the country. So that song had insults about BJP, the ruling party, as well as about Congress, which is the other party.
Obviously.
Now, what happened was we released the video, it was doing really well. The Congress party took that video, deleted the lines which were insults about them, edited the video again, and started circulating it across on Twitter and all social media saying, look at these comedians insulting BJP. Ha, ha, ha.
That is incredible.
Yes.
That is quite shameless of them. Like they didn't feel like you could have any power to, come back at them.
Exactly. You guys called them out on it.
I called them out on it because I saw this guy on Twitter sharing it and I called him out on it, but it was too late. It had already been like 24 hours of them sharing it everywhere. He said, oh, this is the version that I got from someone. I don't know who did this. I'm like, of course you don't know who did this.
But that's just how most political propaganda is spread in any case. I mean, whatever, anything that we read in the news also is all controlled. I don't know. I don't believe anything.
I think maximum trouble is exactly because you have like a whole bunch of seriously low IQ people with very high broadband speeds.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Well, and everyone thinks their opinion's important.
That's a global phenomenon.
Yeah, well, look, you've all talked about kind of outrage culture and offense culture, and I want to ask you about why you think it's so strong in India. Does it just come with, as you say, the internet and democracy and multiculturalism? Is it just simple as plus, plus, plus equals outrage culture?
So what's happening in India right now, India is a very young country. It's developing really quickly. It's also a very multicultural country with diverse languages and influences and thoughts and ideas across the board from north to south. There's so many people with so many different ideas. Now, to have everybody on the same wavelength across a political spectrum or the spectrum of comedy is very tough. So that will create an environment where some people will not understand what stand-up is. Some people won't understand what a sketch is. They won't understand what context is. The whole industry back home in India, keep in mind, is not older than 6 years. Six years. So we've gone from performing in a bar in 2011, when that was the only spot we had. We could get 5 minutes. That was the only room in the country, in the entire country. To see 5 years later, we are now here at the second largest comedy festival in the world. So that kind of growth is phenomenal. So not everyone can keep pace with that growth in terms of being an audience. So while we have a lot of people in India who love what we do, support us, come watch tickets, and there are comedians back in India selling out stadiums, not clubs, stadiums. So while we have that, we also have the fringe who are not necessarily understanding what we're trying to do. They think we're just poking fun at the government, we're poking fun at their religion. They don't understand we're trying to, bring perspective to beliefs.
Sometimes sarcasm is taken at face value.
Oh,
she said this means this only. Like, there's no layer depth. So
I think one of the reasons for that also is that for the longest time in India, comedy that was on television was just a lot of just mimicry and that kind of zone. It was more of just slapstick and mimicry kind of stuff. It was not as much political satire, which suddenly a new wave of comedians are bringing. So that sudden shift is something people are not used to. So very few people are getting
that. Whatever's on television is already approved content.
Oh, yeah. It's
right?
pre-censored.
For us, digital is what's taking us forward right now.
Yeah.
So they're not used to, listening to things or hearing people telling it as it is.
Right. And also with the internet, there's this, you all have big followings on social media.
Yeah.
And then, as you say, the kind of danger of being taken out of context or your sarcasm not being understood. What's the worst thing that's happened that you know of to a comedian? I mean, what are the genuine dangers here?
A couple of things. You want to take this?
So there's a comedy collective in India called All India Bakchod, which is also known as AIB. They did a roast 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
We did a roast 2 years ago, and 4,000 people attended the roast. It went well. Everybody loved it.
It was the biggest, two of the biggest Bollywood celebrities.
Yeah, they roasted two Bollywood celebrities.
But also first time that a roast was done in
was
India.
Done. And like, then a month later, they uploaded it on YouTube, and that's when it just went crazy. People filed cases against them. So there are laws in the Indian penal system that can, that are very, how do you say, vague. You know, stuff like there's a law that's where somebody can say that you offended my religious sentiments.
Now, what is
now, how
that?
Do you define a religious sentiment? You know, so you if you just have one line on or one religious joke, somebody can take you to court for it. So these guys got court cases filed against them left, right, and center in different states in India. So what happens is if somebody files, for example, if somebody files a case against you in Perth, you have to travel to Perth and then attend a hearing in that case. So it went pretty crazy. I think some of the cases are still going on.
Yep. But ironically, the case that was booked against them was obscenity.
Because in this case, it was obscenity.
Because they
used
a lot of, you know, cuss words on stage.
Okay. Yeah.
And now, obscenity can't even, it doesn't cover what they did. Basically, obscenity is where you flash someone in public much against their wishes, right?
Yes.
Here, this was a paying public who knew what they were getting into. And if they didn't like it, they were free to walk out at any time.
So there are laws against obscenity, which...
But there are definite laws which define the rules for stand-up comedy. Right. So everyone's kind of interpreting their own bits.
Yeah.
And, you know, filing FIR.
I think the Catholic community also got offended. Yeah, and they had to apologize.
Yeah, the Catholic
the
community. I'm quite ashamed of that. But because I'm sorry, we were the cool ones for the longest time, you know, in India. We were the guys that were like, we got this, we are okay. But then we got offended as well. And I'm like, what?
I think it also happened with...
That's not what Jesus would do, you know.
And the best
he would forgive and forget, you know.
People are getting offended on behalf of the people who were spoken about.
That's what it is.
So it's not even the people... I mean, if you made fun of like a Bollywood celebrity or, you know, alluded to a Bollywood celebrity in the roast... People were getting offended on their behalf, and they were then contacted by media, and they were like, what, one sec, let me see the video first. By which time it had been taken down. Well, so
I'll tell you a very funny story about that. The whole offense that came from a lot of political parties was just to gain political mileage and nothing else. So I remember another comedian, a friend of mine, who was on one of the news channels having a debate where he's sitting here and there's someone from the Congress party and they're going at each other on national TV. And as soon as the camera switches off, these guys go home together in the same cab. And the and the politician admits that he hasn't even seen the roast. Mm. He has no idea what is going on. He has just been told to go there and yell about something that has happened. And that's what he did. So he didn't even know what he was yelling about.
There was so another, the Anirban story, which happened recently. I don't know if you know.
Exactly,
this.
There's another story there.
There's another comedian, a fairly young and popular comedian, and he put out this one video about one of the freedom fighters, Subhash Chandra Bose. And he did not say anything against him. He said that because there's some people, Bengalis, which is one state, is still very obsessed with Subhash Chandra Bose. He was doing jokes about the people that, you know, it's he was a great leader, but he left quite a couple of years ago and he died mysteriously. Nobody knows the cause of his death. So people still keep on discussing all the weird ways that he could have died and all those conspiracy theories. He did a joke about that. And in, within 24 hours, the threat started from the YouTube section to his contact number. People got his contact number, started calling him and giving me threats and stuff. And he had to ultimately take the video down. And he had to apologize publicly on Twitter and stuff.
That's And so there's this kind of legal level where you're testing the laws. There's an actual kind of birth of a nation style where you're actually trying to do things that haven't been done before on a legal level. And then also there's the cultural level. I mean, do you guys get... tweets all the time bagging you out? Like, how thick a skin do you need?
I must have got 20 tweets right now while we're talking. That's generally how it works in India. Like,
so I have a YouTube channel where I upload video stand-up videos on fairly political and fairly edgy topics. The last one I did was on rape threats, which is very prevalent in India. So every time a woman in India says something or she expresses an opinion on a public platform, she gets threatened with rape to shut her up. So I had a video about that. And yeah, so I wake up to notifications about these videos at 2 and 3 in the morning with these random insults. And I'm like, okay, this is, you want to go back to sleep? That's my life, you know? Mm-hmm. every day I learn a new combination of profanities. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know you could do this one. Oh, great. And I go back to sleep. So,
and are they swearing in English or Hindi?
Both. It depends. Sometimes it depends how much they've understood of my videos. And then it's a combination. Sometimes I'll get people from other countries who have nothing to do with India also joining in, you know. Like the funniest thing that ever happened to me was one after Trump got after Trump won the elections, I think everyone was, you know, I think a couple of months later, and I just ran. He did something which is again was not new, but he said something, and around the same time I just tweeted, "I sense an assassination around the corner." I didn't say anything.
Yeah.
I didn't say who, what, where. Within seconds, somebody from America tagged Homeland Security, the FBI. The CIA. And I just... that's the funniest thing that ever happened to me.
Yeah, we do live in very strange times. So I guess, you know, you know the threats that are out there. You guys are probably the best people to know where the boundary is. So how do you talk about issues that you can't broach really in a straightforward way? What are the kind of tricky ways or the different ways that you go about this? I mean, I know for one, I think it was you, Daniel, you... you did a bit about Fawad Khan, who is a Pakistani actor.
Yeah.
Is that right? Was that you?
Yes, that was
me. So Fawad Khan was a Pakistani actor, and he got into... he was part of a controversy.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah. So what happened was... So Fawad Khan is a Pakistani actor who's been working in Bollywood and living in India for a while. And there are other Pakistani actors as well who've been working in Bollywood. But around the time a film that starred him was about to release, there was a cross-border insurgency between India and Pakistan. So some of their soldiers attacked. There was an attack in the place called Uri. Yeah, and because of which, again, there was outrage across the nation, and everybody was angry with Pakistan, and we should ban all trade with Pakistan. And then for some reason, they turned their attention towards the films. And Bollywood in India is a very easy target if you want political mileage. So they start threatening the filmmakers that we will not allow this film to be released if it has Fawad Khan. But the film was already made. There's nothing they could do. So there was a lot of... then people started taking sides. You know, how can we support actors who come from an enemy state? And it just went crazy because this guy had nothing to do with the attack. Most people in Pakistan had nothing to do with the attack. The attacks that keep happening between India and Pakistan is all politically driven. It's they want to keep you fighting there so that, you know, you're not paying attention to all the other crap the government's doing.
Yeah.
And somehow, for some reason, people just... can't see that. And in India, your patriotism is not defined by how much you love your country, it's defined by how much you hate Pakistan.
Yeah, that's true.
Which I find so bizarre. So I did a video about this, and which was quite funny, by the way.
Yeah.
You can see parts of that in the show today and tomorrow.
And then what happens when you do a video like this is I got a lot of love from Pakistan. Because I was pro Fawad in a way, and a lot of people from India were very confused because the jokes were funny, and I was making a valid point, but they still wanted to hate. So it's just, I think what's happening with outrage right now is that it's become a fashion. So it doesn't matter what you're talking about, somebody will find a reason to hate. So it's just a thing.
Mm.
It's an addiction.
And so for you, Neethi, I mean, Daniel mentioned earlier that what women who have public voices in India face in terms of rape threats and physical danger. I mean, can you talk a bit about what you've faced?
Okay, I remember a time when the government had banned Maggi noodles, which were 2-minute instant noodles. And roughly at the same time, they'd also banned porn. So I remember just some randomly doing some joke about Maggie's been banned, porn has been banned, and so now Indian men won't be able to do anything in under 2 minutes.
That is a great joke.
And I got this virulent, like, just streak of hate from the men. And I remember one particular grammatically challenged person writing something like, "I will sleep you 50 times under 2 minutes." And I was like, you do realize that that reflects rather poorly on your abilities. So, yeah. So, I get, two levels of hate from the normal fringe elements and then from men. So
Right. So, you've got a double, right?
Yeah, but the beauty of India is we've got 33 official languages or more, and you can get cursed in pretty much all of them. So
that is good. Indeed. So, look, we've talked a bit about how you broach those tricky subjects, but actually observational humour is where most of you started comedy. And in the last very kind of short period of time, the last 6 years, a lot of comedy in India has moved from observational to this kind of not quite educational, but that satire, that John Oliver-inspired kind of trying to cut through the noise in the media. So that's taken American comedians 30 years to transition from observational to satire. So can you talk a little bit about why you feel the need to do one rather than the other?
I think that space was missing in India for the longest time, to be honest. There's obviously news on television, which is heavily propaganda-driven. If there's one story that breaks out in the country, you can see two different news channels giving completely different spins to it. Same way the two newspapers, completely different spins to it, depending on which political party is backing that. So the honest news and honest medium is kind of missing in the country. I still think it's not enough. Like, probably 4 or 5 comedians are doing news comedy. I think 30 people need to be doing news comedy, given the amount of bullshit that India churns out every week. Okay, yeah. So I think that space was missing, and that's where we come in, where we're giving you what's happening and you're also making an honest point about it, which the people want to talk about and know about, which nobody's doing on TV, one, thanks to the political funding, and two, mainly because of the censorship on TV. Indian TV censorship is horrible. I was a script writer for TV and films before doing comedy for 5 years, and I've seen the level of panic they create by even one minor word that you put out in the script. So I think that's where we came in, where we kind of bring, we kind of combine comedy with journalism, and that's what is really important now.
I understand to some level, because I remember having this conversation with someone, I understand some of the censorship bits, because you know in India still TV is watched collectively together with, as a family thing. So you would worry about your children watching it. There is that level. But then again, in a country with a population of 1.2 billion, our government sees it fit to even beep out words like condom. I'm like, that's the word you should be propagating.
I'll give you a funny example. There's a very popular Indian movie called Queen. Highly popular. It came out 3 years ago. Very, very popular movie about this one girl. And that movie, when it came on national television, there was a scene where this girl just picks up a bra from her living room. They blurred out bra. That's the level that they went to. Like, if you see, again, we were watching some live, one of the fashion weeks or something, where Kim Kardashian and Kanye West were sitting, and she was saying something that was revealing her cleavage. They just made a black block, rectangular block to.
So maybe that was something she was wearing. You never know.
You never know with Kim Kardashian. But it's just.
No, even James Bond, I remember. The kissing scene between Monica Bellucci and Daniel Craig was too long a kiss for our censors.
Yes.
So they were like, you can't have that long a kiss, you can have this much of a kiss.
Yeah.
Well, After that, he has to marry her.
That's progress. I feel like that's progress for India, you know. You used to not be able to have kissing on TV at all.
Yeah, well...
You still need to do a lot of observational humour. Do you feel like it's your job to do more political stuff just because you're one of very few women comedians? Do you feel kind of a burden, or is it you just do what you like?
Honestly, I didn't set out to be the feminist comedian. I just set out to be funny. And then they just kept hanging this albatross around my neck.
Yeah.
And I was telling Daniel the other day, I was writing, I started to do comedy. Frankly, I've had a really good life. I know most people will hate me for saying that, but I'm not in pain.
Not yet.
But when I started to write, when I started to talk, there was all this angst coming out. So it's not male bashing, it's actually experiences I've had. You know, walking on the road, getting unwanted attention, the usual life of an Indian woman.
Yes.
And, And yeah, so it just, it's part of my life's experience. I'm not like making it up.
Right, it's just storytelling. Yes. And that's something I think you probably have a common with a lot of minority comedians around the world. It's not unique to India, but perhaps those stories, what we have on social media is more like blogs and Twitter allow women to tell those stories, and then maybe comedies in another way that can be expressed. Going back to satire, we talked a bit about John Oliver and Trevor Noah and people like that who I know you two in particular kind of look up to. What about satire in newspapers? Do you think that, you know, do you think that stand-up is the best satire in India, or where else can you find it?
Right now we have columnists, a lot of stand-up comedians who also write columns for prominent newspapers. We've got podcasts. We've got a couple of podcasts.
Podcast culture is starting out in India now,
so
I think.
Once I head back, I'm starting my podcast. So it's the mediums. There are various mediums. There are cartoonists as well. But I think personally, right now, with the kind of audience that we have, the biggest reach is the internet. So it's sketch comedy and stand-up right now, which is reaching the young people in India. The most. No, they aren't reading newspapers as much.
But we've had an ancient tradition of satire through what we used to call Hasya Kavi, which was basically poetry, you know, and told with a straight face. And a lot of the issues used to get addressed in it, but it was not uncomfortable for anyone. It was just a gentle chiding.
Yeah.
As much as a husband would do to a wife without getting in trouble, just about that much.
But you say, you know, mainly young people that are your audience just then. And I think what the age group is, what, like 14 to 35 on YouTube, so something like
YouTube
that?
YouTube stats usually are about 15 to 25, 28.
Mine is between, 18 to 35 is my audience.
Right.
That's the majority of
pretty
my
much, I think the youngest, I think 15 to 35 is the range that is generally consuming comedy across the board. Basically, a lot of college-going kids and a lot of young people. Even when you come to a comedy show in India, the average age would be 25. Like, hardly many elderly people come to comedy shows. Those who come, they definitely enjoy it. But that culture is still, it's still considered a very cool, young thing to do right now.
But it's also reflective of the population of India on the whole. So more than 50% of our population right now is between the ages of 25 to 35. So we are a very young country in terms of the people that live there. So a lot of the old people, you know, who are more accessible through mediums like the news and print, etc. So
I'm still on that.
They're still there, but right now, everything that's happening, both politically and with religion and et cetera, is it's all with the young people. Like even the incident that happened in JNU.
Right.
Yeah, so there's a big, huge political uprising of sorts in a college because two youth wings of a political party, you know, clashed over there. So right now, it's just everything that's happening in India has to do with young people across the board.
And do you think that perhaps your humour is, because you know your audience, you know what age they are, do you think perhaps that older generations misunderstand you? Do you think there's a generational gap in a kind of, I guess, a cultural understanding?
There's a misunderstanding with the young people as well. Yeah. So it's not restricted. But yes, when you consider that there is a big age difference and somebody watching a YouTube video will definitely take things out of context, that is a big difference, but I think I'm not too focused on age as much as I'm focused on sensibility.
It's more of that. I don't think age is the problem.
These young people are living with the older people that we're talking about. Just their parents, their grandparents, their uncles, their aunties. So they're all part of the same ecosystem. It's just that they're consuming comedy through different mediums.
So I think I remember one gentleman got offended. I was on TV for one of the debates about, we were doing liquor ban in one of the states, and they called me on TV to speak about that. And for once, I was making sense. I did some research and went, and this one politician was just talking absolute rubbish, okay? And at some point, when he had no way to defend himself, he shouted at the news anchor saying, "Why have you got these jokers?" talk about this. Yeah. And I'm like, I have better points and more facts than you have, my friend. And then he had nothing to say after that. So sometimes people think that, oh, you're a comedian, you should stick to... That's a line we get very often.
Stick okay. to
you're a comedian, now. Stick to stick comedy, to. Don't get into politics. I'm like, but you're a politician doing comedy now. So where's the line? I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. So
also, I genuinely feel that, you know, older people get irony and sarcasm more because even in our political system, the debates used to be intelligent and they used to have humor, and that's how it was a debate. It wasn't like one person shouting and the other person throwing chairs at him, like what's happening in our parliament now. You know, yes. It's this gap, this generation that we are living in right yeah. now, that humor seems to be evaporating.
And with the humor comes, I guess, an understanding. And I know that when you talk about politics, I've heard you say before in other interviews that you don't seek to divide further. What you're trying to do is make people see their common ground.
Yeah, if you listen to, you know, our ex-Prime Minister, Vajpayee, you know, he was such a great orator. Even Rajiv Gandhi, you know, he would bring humor to the table when he would be addressing. We have Shashi Tharoor. Yeah. I mean, you should hear his addresses. It makes you crave. They're there. They're talking. It used to be there. I don't know what's happened now. Even politicians are afraid to be funny because they can be taken out of context and just that one sentence will be like hammered down their throat. So...
Yeah, I mean, I think Australians would probably say the same about our politicians at the moment. They speak in these kind of short bites that can only... because they know that if they don't, then someone... If they use a full sentence, then maybe someone will take the first two words.
Yeah, and right, this exactly. is a lot to do with trial by media also, which is the current environment. Mm. You know, a lot of this, like Sapun said, a lot of times, yes, you will just take that one clip of something he said or we said, it'll be aired and you will already be judged... and, you know, punished before you have a chance to defend yourself. By the time you come up with the actual clip, you're gone. You're finished.
Absolutely. Yeah. On the flip side, I think you have a kind of an advantage in some ways because India is such a big country.
Right.
And yeah. truly, I think the test of a joke is, you know, there's no objective, this joke is funny. I think the test of a joke is, does a group of people laugh at it? And you have that access to an audience. Can you talk a bit about how the size of India and the kind of... I guess the demographics a bit more influence you.
So, yeah, so in terms of numbers, and which is why I think something that keeps encouraging us to continue doing what we're doing is the numbers. Like, so when you look at a video that has 1 million views, the likes to dislikes ratio is always in our favor. So, you know, we don't go by comments. I think YouTube comments are the last place in the world to look for signs of intelligent life. So I don't... really, I think... Thank you. That was really good. I like that. And I think if you just... And I'm a fan of numbers. If you just look at the numbers and if the numbers are working in your favor, you keep doing what you're doing. And to give you an idea of what... the numbers are like. I think the most popular YouTube channels right now are in excess of what, 100 million views or more than that?
Yeah, easily.
Easily, close to 500 million.
2 million subscribers.
2 million subscribers. The most popular channel right now is around 2 million subscribers, and these are individual subscribers with over 500 million views. So, and that's the kind of reach and measurement that you can't get through TV. So a lot of comedians are shirking television deals. Like I said no to a television deal recently because I'm like, I don't even know who's watching this.
Yeah.
Because my audience wants to watch comedy on their phones. They want to watch it on their laptops. They're not going to tune in when you tell them to tune in. Mm. So, yes, I think we are very excited. It's a very exciting place to be a comedian right now. You know, we've spoken about the fact that there are certain things that we keep in mind when we're developing material and doing our shows. But it's very exciting. We're on the forefront of building an entire industry. So technology is playing a very big role. We're reaching out to people we never thought we would from all over the world, not just in India. And I think the numbers speak for themselves. So we just have to keep doing what we're doing. And we're obviously going to have people who don't like what we do, but the majority still...
Yeah, like you'll always have that.
So that's part and parcel of life. So.
Yeah. The fact that this new art form has taken root and is flourishing and starting to become popular also speaks a lot about our country, that it is that free environment which is allowing it. But as far as censorship goes, I think it's three levels, government, society and self.
Mm.
And I think the last one is the most important.
Yeah. Do you want to talk a bit more about, you know, your kind of, like, you say your material comes from your own experiences. Do you find yourself self-censoring?
I do all the time because, like he said, I'm very careful about, am I punching down? Am I saying something that can be misconstrued? I'll give you an example. It wasn't even comedy. It was, like, as part of my Bollywood shoot, we had those, you know, those fake guns. And it was just one of those moments I kind of put it to my temple, took a photo and said, goodbye, cruel world. It was just one of those ones because I was rewriting that scene for the 28th time or something. And immediately I actually had a slew of messages saying, listen, young girls are looking at this and young people follow you and they're impressionable and suicide is a big problem right now. Mm-hmm. And it just made me think like, oh my God, I was impulsive and I didn't even... So immediately I took that post down. I wouldn't have done it. I don't really listen to people too much.
Yeah.
But this made me think that, you know, what comes out of your mouth, there has to be some level of responsibility.
And you have a different audience, I imagine. You probably have more female fans. Is that fair to say?
No. I like to believe that I have more male fans.
Yeah.
They Guys, have the female fans.
You've seen the hair?
Bought new shoes for this. What is this?
So he's cornered the market on the teeny boppers.
Teeny boppers?
Yeah,
teeny
he's
boppers.
Got the 35-something.
No?
Yes! Yes! Yes!
I just get the, you know, I get the discerning
audience. That's not
audience
true, guys. It's
who
much
like
younger.
Intelligent
yeah, yeah.
It's much younger. Quite popular in colleges.
But that's true, you know, it's sometimes, you know, like when you get messages from fans, you get really excited thinking, oh, girls are messaging you. And then I see their ID and it says something like Natasha underscore 2001, like they're born in 2001. I'm like, what? Yeah. I'm an uncle to you. What are you doing?
And also, aside from the demographics of gender and age and size of India, there's also, I think... English, which is the primary language that stand-up is conducted in.
Yes.
How do you think that affects the content?
I think there is a major class divide in India, I'll be honest. I mean, which is very clearly evident. And I think the language also kind of warrants and that content changes because of that. If you're doing comedy in English, it's reaching out to a very niche audience who chances are mostly slightly evolved, better educated. And don't take offense, which is not... I mean, there's always a fringe group who will take offense. But I think that is one thing that is keeping us away from a danger to an extent.
Yeah, like, so example, I just said this the other day as well. I have a channel where I've written stand-up about rape. I've written stand-up about terrorism. I've done jokes on religion. I've done jokes on the government. And I haven't gone to trouble at all. And I'm wondering why. Like, you know, I need a little bit of controversy, you know, just to get that push career-wise. And... I'm just waiting for that to
get the teeny bobs back in your life.
And then there was, I'll get you both after the show. But, and I just said this the other day as well, there was another comedian in India who was about to upload a video that's very political in nature. And another comic who was senior to him gave him advice and said, don't cut these certain jokes out. And he's like, no, but Daniel has done similar jokes as well. He's talking about similar stuff. Why can't I do it? He's like, because Daniel does it in English. So that is a big factor. And I'm not looking at somebody who speaks English is better off than someone who does not. It's just the reach of the language. And there are certain things that, because of the syntax of the language, your points are not said in the exact same manner. You can't transcribe them from A to B. Yeah. So when you change it, you are changing the context. So the context in Hindi is very emotional. The stuff that you say hits you straight in the gut. Where with English, it's more cerebral, it's more in the mind. You're thinking, you know?
Yeah.
So that kind of triggers a different response.
Like I had done one video about, there was this one news comedy video done about women and temples in India. There's a longest debate going on that women in India are not allowed into places of worship, whether it's temples or mosques.
Certain temples.
Certain temples and certain mosques, very popular ones, if they are on their periods. They think that they will make their god impure. And that was a big video. I did a 5-minute-long video about it. It went on really well. It was in English. People loved it and I got a lot of support. Some people started making small memes out of it to share it in a positive way. So this one girl cut out this one clip where I just say, there's this one line in the video which says that in India, we are more concerned about women entering temples without permission than men entering women without permission. Now, it's a very, if you just quote it out of context, it sounds very wrong because, and people just took that line in a positive way initially, but then it spread out so much, people thought I'm just comparing temples and I'm insulting Hinduism and comparing it to rape. And then the amount of hate I got 2 months later, I still get hate because of that one screenshot. So that out of context thing goes on very often.
Mm. And do you think that you could have made that joke in Hindi?
I'm not sure. It's a very delicate line. I don't know how I would script that in Hindi. I think a lot of times wordplay is very important.
Yeah.
You could do. I also feel that you could do the nastiest joke about somebody if you have the right words for it. If you say it in the right words. Like again, when the currency ban happened, I've done this 7-8 minute long bit about it without naming our prime minister, but doing 10 jokes about him. People who get it, they get it. So it's one of those things where you don't say it out loud.
It's in the nuance.
Yeah, it's in the nuance of it, yeah.
Okay. Well, I know we've talked a bit about the demographics, but I have to say I do know that all three of you, are you all from North India? Is it exclusive to North India, the comedy scene?
No. The comedy scene has its base in Bombay, Mumbai. Represent.
Yeah.
And then you have circuits in Delhi, Bangalore, Chennai as well,
now,
and a little bit in Calcutta.
And now in Hyderabad, Pune.
Is coming up. So a lot of tier two cities are joining on as well. But business hub of comedy is Mumbai.
And do you find that different crowds have different tastes? Like, is Mumbai more advanced because they've had it for longer, or?
No. I think most cities, except Calcutta, are on point. I'm talking from experience. I'm sorry. I just don't know. But yeah, I think my favorite cities to perform in are Bombay, Pune, Delhi, Bangalore, Chennai. I mean, they're on point. So Chennai is in South India, which has a very high literacy rate. So they are on point with everything. Like, they are so smart.
My favorite cities right now are Chennai and Hyderabad.
And even Bangalore.
Bangalore, hands down for me. Hands down.
Delhi, with Delhi, you have to have like at least 5 dick jokes.
Not true.
You need a little bit of, come on.
Sometimes.
Come on.
Delhi's
that is true. You need a little bit of. You have to start at the bottom, work your way up. You know, it's like, you can't start from here straight away. But all in all, there is a little. When you play the circuit enough, you know what to expect from the audiences. But they're all great live show audiences. So I've had great shows in Delhi, Bangalore, Bombay, all of these places. So
I
that's
think
again,
in smaller cities like Lucknow and stuff. Now I think what is happening is thanks to our reach on YouTube. Anybody who's coming for a show, even in the smallest city, has seen your videos and now they're coming for the show. So they know what to expect. They like you already. They're kind of probably like, you know, they've seen you. They're a fan. So the crowds that we're going to now are far more responsive than the crowds. If I was going to the same city four years ago, it was an audience who probably didn't know what stand-up was, or there were some invitees. So they were half into it, half not into it. You could not do too many jokes which were dirty. But now you can go play in pretty much any city in India and you'll get the audience who's been following you. So and you can do your dick jokes and get away with it.
And something I want to say right now also is because if you're a comedian who's not from India, if you're an Australian comic and you're thinking you want to come perform in India, you must come there.
Oh, yeah.
So don't get fazed by the fact that, oh, there are restrictions and there are people who are getting offended. Those people don't come for the shows. So all the offense is happening on the internet. You just shut your laptop and the offense is gone, you know?
Yeah.
But India has a great live show audience. You know, we are packing in auditoriums as much as 2,000 people. I did a college gig for 5,000 students recently.
Yeah.
So it's a great scene. And I think it will really help our scene if comedians from Australia, if comedians from the UK, if comedians from America come down. And they have been coming down in small numbers.
UK came that, like 200 years ago.
They came a long time ago. That's when the first Brexit happened. So I think I as a comedian who also produces shows back home, I want to encourage comedians from outside India to come visit and see what the scene is all about. But be funny, of course. The Indian audiences live audiences are very sharp. They're on point. They get all their cultural references and they are eager to laugh. They have a good time. So
and they're very generous with our applause.
With the applause, yes.
So you mentioned earlier the politician said to you, why are these jokers on the TV? I mean, what is the reputation that you have? There's obviously prestige to some degree with having such fans online, but is it understood by the general populace? Oh, I'm a stand-up comedian.
So your fame depends on where you are.
Yeah.
You know, it's there are some places where we get recognized all the time, and then suddenly you're at another location where the crowd is completely different, and nobody knows who you are. So it's a small bubble kind of fame.
It's a very niche audience we're catering to, yeah. So they know us. Like, it happens a lot of times that if you're in a mall or something shopping, the kid would come and their mother or father would come saying, he wants to take a photo with you, but I don't know who you are.
Yeah,
I don't
know why. This happens a lot. Yeah.
One mother took a photo with me just saying, I don't know who you are, but my son says you're popular, so I'm also taking one.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's a bit of a weird thing.
It's internet fame. It's not...
Yeah.
And have you been spotted in Melbourne by...
Yeah,
it's happened to...
Something very weird happened. Like, Indians do spot you. I think Indians spot you all the time. But the day I landed and I was standing outside town hall, one white chick just passed saying, oh my God, I love you. I think she was mistaken. Because that's not possible. I know my limits.
I think she thought you were Nate Valvo or something like that.
Maybe. Yeah. Because that's not possible. Yeah. That's out of my reach. That's.
Is it? Or do you say you have international audience?
No, I think she would have known you because I think I did Comedy Up late last year on ABC and they uploaded the video and I have some Australians who've commented, you know, that this is really good and when he comes on next, I'm going to watch his shows. Also, on our YouTube channel, we have analytics which tells us where our subscribers are from. Mm-hmm. So I have about 900 subscribers from Melbourne. So.
Right.
I don't know where they are.
How many of you are here?
So, I wouldn't be surprised if someone walked up to me and said, you know.
But what about the people in your life, like your friends, your family? What do they think of what you do?
They keep us grounded. Very grounded.
Because your story is very interesting, Neeti, because you went from quite a successful career in ads now to stand-up, quite a contrast in terms of the hours, the prestige.
Well, it started out with advertising, then I wrote for Sesame Street.
That's right, yeah.
We launched Sesame Street in India, and then I got into this. So my dad thinks I'm like on a reverse gear on my career path.
And is writing for kids harder than writing for adults?
No, it's easy. You grew up with all the don'ts. It was easy just to transfer them onto the kids, right? Don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. You're done.
So now you know how to write for everybody.
I wish. I hope.
Okay, we're going to go to questions pretty soon. So now is a good time to put your thinking caps on for what you might want to ask our excellent comedians. And tell me, who have your highlights been at the Comedy Festival this year?
Hands down, Hannah Gadsby.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And
Tom Walker. Really
and
good.
Yesterday, I saw Trigvi Walkinshaw. Oh, my God. 1.5 hour of pure genius.
Yeah.
Just solo. Please, you should go watch him. And us. We have two shows up at 4.
I think we have been the highlight for ourselves. Like.
But I do think it's kind of fascinating that you've built this industry from the ground up. Where do you learn comedy from? Like, how did the industry kind of teach itself?
So I think a bunch of us were already following stand-up abroad. I mean, we have access to the best, you know, we have Chris Rock's HBO specials, Louis C.K. So in terms of actual stand-up, a lot of us were already following stand-up. In terms of producing shows, I think a bunch of us just took it upon ourselves to find venues and you know, just run our own gigs. So I have a venue that I've been running for 5 years now. And then I recently also partnered with a friend of mine who's now my business partner, and we started a comedy club in Bangalore. So I think one of the reasons why our industry is as successful as it is because a lot of comedians took interest in the business side of things. Mm. So I think some of the most popular rooms in the country are run by comedians.
Yeah.
It is funny because anybody who's not a comedian who tried to get a piece of the pie, it just didn't work, it just didn't survive.
Yeah.
So every successful enterprise in comedy in India right now is run by a comedian.
Yeah.
And what a stark contrast to, say, Australia or the UK or the US, where the bosses or the managers are very different to the talent.
Yes.
And in some ways, I think that influences how you develop.
Correct.
I think when we started out, we literally did this about 5 years ago. We literally went venue by venue saying, hey, we are comedians. We'll do jokes in your venue. Will you give us a spot? And they would give you like a Monday or Tuesday night. and in return they'll give you like half a burger and one pint of beer, and you just perform for 10 people. That's literally how we started. Yeah, I remember that's how Danny and I used to stand outside pubs talking about, nobody wants us, what do we do? And that's how we started. We went city to city and we just went venue by venue. Sometimes you'd find people who would really like you and they'll give you spots. Sometimes people would just think that you'll bring in an audience, and they would think just commercial sense that if I do a comedy night, they'll bring in 30 people on a Wednesday night, which I would not normally get. And that is literally how we've all started back in India.
And we found our way in the dark. You know, we figured things out, and thankfully we were talented enough. and we got to where we were. And now it's funny because a lot of the venues who said no to us before are now calling us up. Yeah. You guys want to do comedy? I'm like, no.
That's true. And because you run your own clubs and you can do that.
We can do that. So I think we've collectively, again, I always say this, the credit to the success of the Indian comedy scene goes to every comedian who picked up a mic, got on stage and made it happen. So whether you're producing shows, whether you're not producing shows, as long as you're part of the scene, you are responsible for its success. So I think every one of us deserves a pat on the back for what we've done. Yeah.
On that note, I did get lucky because at that point, I think female comedians were like... So I was the unicorn, and so I remember that venue that I started with, Looney Goons.
Oh, yes, yes,
they
yes,
approached yes. me oh, yeah. and said, come and do comedy. So that's the first... Yeah, and it was a really tough room because it was kind of like this and about this big, in fact.
Wow.
And,
but with noisy North Indians.
Delhi, not really used to comedy. And that's the first time we were actually flying down comedians to come and perform in the room. And so I remember one comic was up on stage telling his jokes. And in the middle of that, this was a pub, right? So in the middle of that, we had a birthday cake come in with sparklers on. So he's we like, and so stories. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, he's just done the setup and like, happy birthday to
Yeah, I think every comic has one heckler or all a bad experience from Delhi. Yeah,
I you know, like now we think that we are fairly popular in our heads. We think so, right? So like I thought, you know, I'm doing so well. Last month in May, I did one corporate gig in Goa. And I thought, oh, I'm so popular, people will know me. I went on stage, this was for a company, okay? And when I went on stage, there were two Russian girls in bikinis who entered with shorts for all of the audience. Wow. And of course, there's no competition then. I mean, I'm like, hey guys, and like, shorts, woo! So...
Actually, that's the irony. You know, corporate shows are our bread and butter, but they do take a piece of your soul, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I love the don'ts we get, right? Keep it clean, no religious, nothing political, nothing controversial. That gets a little muddy because controversial is.
Yeah.
And I remember doing exactly this. I'm doing this. I'm addressing a huge room. It was out in the lawns. I finish my bit and it's gone off decent. And then I walk out and there are actually giant cocktail glasses. Giant, I mean like giant. And there are Russian dancers floating in them.
I want to go to that party.
I was like, you wanted me to be clean?
the contradiction. Yeah, absolutely. I know you've talked a bit about how your experiences inform your comedy. What were you both doing before you started comedy, and how does that inform it?
So I was working in an ad film production house for about 6 months. Prior to that, I was doing my MBA in advertising. That's when I tried stand-up for the first time. And it went fairly okay. And I thought it was a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I had no idea there was a scene in Bombay taking off. So when I got to Bombay, I tried a couple of open mics. I really liked it. At the same time, I got sick of my job. I think that's very important, to hate something before you start liking someone else. So I started getting really sick of my job. And I then attended a Metallica gig in Bangalore in 2011. And that's when I decided, you know, I saw James Hetfield on the stage rocking it out at about 56 or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, I want this life. And went back home, went back to Bombay, quit my job, never worked for anyone again after that. And it's just been comedy ever since. So.
And how about you, Sapan?
I tried about like 6 or 7 different jobs right before this. Like along with college and stuff, I was copywriting at an ad agency for a couple of months. I did movie reviewing. I assisted on films and stuff. I wrote a couple of film scripts. Then about 3 years, I was a proper script writer for television and films and award shows back in India. I was a freelance writer. I was writing like 3 shows at the same time. And the beauty was that I was writing for a lot of English or Hinglish youth-based channel. So I was already writing a lot of comedy scripts. Mm. So I think that really helps me in my career now that I have 3 years of writing experience. And that's when stand-up scene was just starting out. And to be honest, writers are treated like shit in India. They don't even call you by your name. They just, like, you're just called a writer on set. Like, most people don't know you by your name. They just call the writers, you have a change in the line. And even financially and stuff, you are the least respected person on the set, to be honest, as opposed to the culture here. So I was already kind of frustrated with that. And then I realized that I am writing funny scripts for other people, so let me just try it myself. So one night I just signed up for a show. I didn't tell anyone. I told my girlfriend and one of my friends, my family, and nobody knew that I'm doing comedy. I went up, I did a show. It went well. Then I went and told everyone I did this. And my father's first reaction was, what is stand-up? And then I took him for a show, then they saw it, and that's how it began.
And now, do you have fans that want to follow in your footsteps?
Oh, yeah. I have people messaging in every single day asking me, if I want to try stand-up for the first time, what do I do? Give me some advice. Can you mentor me? And I'm just like, I don't need the competition, man. You
just don't do it.
Stick to your job. Just stay in school, get a job, buy tickets, come watch me. That's all the comedy you need.
Yeah. But it is a new cool thing to do back in India. I think like till like 5 years ago, it was probably learning to play the guitar.
Yeah.
Or it was like, I want to be a wildlife photographer. Yeah. Now the new thing is I want to be a comedian.
And the future is such that, you know, people are actually quitting jobs, established set jobs, to actually try comedy full time.
And here's another reality. Comedy in India is now paying way more than regular jobs that people have studied for years. Studied for years.
So. Well, there's something to aspire to there. Are there anyone in the audience who wants to ask questions?
Hi, this is for Nindi, I think. In Australia, there's not many women comedians. There's still a smaller audience. And as a woman, is your audience usually men initially, or is it largely becoming more women? And do you anticipate there'll be more women comedians?
It's always a healthy mix, fortunately. Unfortunately, there is, and this is global, people think women are not funny. And I'm like, that's because men don't listen.
He's listening to you now.
He's listening.
Yeah, and currently in India, the beauty is that there are a lot of females that are stepping into the open mics. Yeah. And so soon, I think I'm going to be usurped very badly.
Nithi and Sapan, you've touched on this, and I'm wondering if you can elaborate a bit. You talked about your parents' reactions or your father's reactions, both of you, to your careers. And Nithi, you said it was sort of a backward trajectory your father had mentioned that you were going on. What is the perception of comedy as a career in India? And a second part to that, what opportunities are there for the youth of today to develop their skills and to go into comedy?
Honestly, I think when we started out about 5 or 6 years ago, there was no career in comedy. Even we didn't know where we were going. We just got into it blindly because we loved it and just for the passion of it. I think now people are seeing that comedy can be a full-time job. Though, to be very real with you, I can count, there are possibly at the max 40 or 50 comedians who are doing this full-time and making good money out of it. There are still a lot of people struggling. For every one comedian who's doing it full-time, there are 20 comedians who are struggling, who's been doing this for the last 5 years. So I won't say, if anybody ever asks me that I want to do comedy, I always tell them, don't quit your day job. Don't quit your education for this. You can easily do this on the side, over the weekends. Open mics happen at night. Start that way. Give it 6 months to a year. Find out if you're good at it. If you're not, you might have to go back to your job as well. Which is true, which has happened with a lot of comedians, to be honest. I've seen that in India as well, where people quit their full-time jobs, came to do comedy, could not make it for 2 years, have gone back to their jobs, and now are getting paid even less than what they were earlier. So that is the reality of it. Though, I think now people, thanks to the YouTube circuit and everything, comedians are doing a lot of bigger things back in India. Yeah. Comedians are not just doing live stand-up shows, they're doing YouTube shows, comedians are getting offered TV shows, comedians are doing
brand
films.
Work. Brand work. A lot they're of doing brand advertisement. Work where people are saying, you know, write little clips for us or ads for us because digital is the future.
They're doing films and stuff. Like, comedians are acting in like proper big budget Bollywood movies now. So there is a big scope, but it's pretty much like, I would say it's exactly like the music industry in that sense, that you, it just depends on how good you are, and that's how popular you can get, pretty much. If
yeah, and because English stand-up is still so niche, you know, you do a really good show with a room like this size, and at the applause break, when you get down, someone will ask you, so what is it that you really do?
Yeah. Always.
That always happens. But yeah, there's actually a lot of writing work coming down to comedians. So that's a nice pocket money, I guess.
Yeah, like lots of small things are happening. Like a lot of web-based advertising is coming to comedians now. Brands, instead of going to, say, a conventional ad agency, prefers going to a comedian who's popular online, because they know that a comedian knows what the online world likes and what clicks with the audience. He's dealing with this. So a lot of comedians are doing a lot of digital brand. I think all of us keep on doing a lot of advertisements and like brand endorsements and stuff now, because that's what the brands are coming to.
And if there are any brands listening to me right now, I can do stuff other than sanitary towels and bras, please.
And I can do sanitary towels and bras as well. So.
You mentioned politically correctness in stand-up comedy, but how does that compare to like political cartoons? We recently had a political cartoonist come from India, and he effectively said that the only thing that the audience are sensitive about is if he demeans women, but other than that, everything's open.
So every newspaper in India has a political satire-based cartoon strip that it's on the front page of the paper, which largely lampoons politics, primarily movies, and to some effect religion as well. Yeah. It all depends.
Current affairs mostly.
I don't think they're heavily censored beyond a certain point, because they still keep their humor very light. It's not very provocative.
I don't think cartoonists cross the line as much in India. Yes. They're very touch and go. They do make fun of something, but it's kind of mostly in a safer space. I've not seen too many cartoons or comics which have been extremely edgy that I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe.
And it's a very niche career
in India right now,
cartooning.
R.K. Lakshman's been the longest running.
But he's been the only guy for so many years.
He personifies them very blatantly, and some of his comments are extremely cutting, yet very accepting.
I'm not sure
if I've heard of him. Oh, okay. But the reach of cartoon strips is primarily with newspapers. They don't really get shared online as much, so any outrage that happens usually will be someone writing a letter to the paper.
To the paper, yeah.
Which again, it's very contained feedback. As opposed to what we do, where it's immediate, you get a notification and then you keep responding.
Yeah. That's on behalf.
Yes.
I'd like to thank the three of you for all that you offer, because I think to help us to laugh is a great service to society.
It's very kind of you. Thank you.
But I know that it's hard, and I know that you make it look easy. And so one thing I've always been curious about with regard to comics is, to what extent do you immerse yourself in the theory of comedy?
Oh, completely. I mean, it's all I think about from the moment I wake up. It's not a job anymore. It's just a way of life now. You know, that's why I was single for so long. Because for the 3 years that I was single, every woman that I met had to compete with comedy and not other women. It just consumes you, you know. It's just, there are moments where you just want to be all by yourself, and you just want to soak in things. You want to write, you want to just rehearse. I can't imagine doing anything else. There isn't a set. I have never taken a holiday in the last 6 years, even though I've been all over the world.
That's the good side and the bad side of it. Though it's not a full-time job, like it's not a 9-to-5 job. That's what people think, right? You're a comedian, you just go on stage for 30 minutes and make money. The other side is that there's no off or there's no holiday.
There's no switch.
You're always like cued into what is happening. There's no Saturday or Sunday. You're usually performing or traveling. So it's always like comedy is not just a job. It becomes a way of life. is what like pretty much happens.
It becomes such a part of your fabric that sometimes you're actually saying something to someone and they're like waiting for the punchline. And you're like, no, I really meant it.
And I will say this, being a comedian is a lot of hard work in the sense that it takes a toll on your mind. So this is not something that's very spoken about very freely, but a lot of comedians are suffering from severe anxiety and depression. So it takes a lot out of you. So when you see a comedian on stage doing an hour and killing it, just remember that he probably goes back home to a very empty space where he's just at, you know, at a battle with himself or herself. So there is a dark side to comedy as well. But I think to answer your question is it's all consuming. There's just no other way to describe it. But happy thoughts.
I just wanted to ask about taboo issues, I guess. Gay and lesbian comedians in Australia are pretty visible at the moment.
Yes.
And I've especially just noticed that really this year at this comedy festival. I'm just wondering if that's something that is covered, has been covered, or is that sort of an issue that you can see being covered?
I think it's starting now.
I've
seen two people, Nick and the other guy in Bombay.
Nick, Vasu.
Vasu and...
There's a guy.
Madhvendra also, yeah. There are three or four comedians who... Who've come into the scene recently. To be honest, I think Vasu was the only one who was there for
a longer time.
Yeah. But it's not as predominant as it's over here.
Because it's illegal.
It's illegal right now. So there's a law in India that makes homosexuality a crime. So there are movements, there are organizations that are fighting to repeal this law. Comedians are on board as well. So we do whatever we can to, you know, provide a progressive opinion or an approach or an influence towards this. So it will take us some time because we are fighting that battle right now on behalf of the LGBTQ community. We are with them. It will take us some time, but there are comedians who are also coming forth and addressing their sexuality on stage, and they're being really funny about it. So that's very encouraging.
Yeah.
So hopefully the kind of influence we've had in other spaces or other spheres of life with our comedy, hopefully we'll also be able to, you know, tackle this issue. And maybe 5 years from now, you'll see the same level of participation from the LGBTQ community on stage as much as you see over here. Because that's something that really encouraged me as well when I came here.
I was also blown away by the whole, like...
Yeah, Rhys Nicholson is my favorite. Rhys, if you're watching this, you're amazing. Yeah.
And thank you for asking that. I think that was a very important question. Do we have anything else?
Hi, so we're your subscribers from Melbourne. We just wanted to ask...
Is that you? Yeah.
So I just wanted to know, where do you draw the line with taboo topics? Where do you know that you've completely pushed something and you can't talk about it anymore?
So I just think about how this most stupidest person in the country would react to something I would say, and then I cross that line. So my philosophy with comedy is something that one of my influences said. His name is Patrice O'Neill. So he said, whenever I do a joke, I want 50% of the audience to laugh, and I want the remaining 50 to go, did he just say that? So that's what I'm trying to do with my comedy. And I think there should be no line that we cannot cross. And I think if you're not offending people, your comedy is not provocative enough.
Sometimes you don't know where the line is till you've tripped over
it. Till you've crossed it, yeah, exactly. Yeah, sometimes you find out the hard way.
Hi. I was actually involved in bringing the Melbourne Comedy Festival to India in 2012.
Nice.
Thank you so much. Hi.
Thank you.
And the interesting thing about that is it was completely supported by the Australian government. It was part of their cultural diplomacy program. And from my perspective, it was one of the best things we ever did in terms of exposing Indian audiences to Australia, you know, really having Australians talking directly to Indian audiences.
Yeah.
And I think the people in this room have probably learnt more about contemporary India listening to you than, you know, reading lots of articles. So I'm wondering, can you imagine a scenario in which the Indian government ever sees comedy as a way of, you know, connecting young Indian comedians with other audiences overseas? You know, is there any interest from the government? Could you ever imagine that they would say, this is a fantastic way about India showing itself to the world? Or do you think you will always be kind of counter to that?
No, absolutely, because our Prime Minister made a quote in Parliament, remember?
About he says a lot of things, but...
I think we speak too much shit about the government, so...
Yeah, I'll give you a realistic answer. I don't see it happening in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Maybe... Same. No, I don't see it happening.
No, not really.
I don't see the government supporting what we do.
I think they're very picky about it.
And sending us to another country. Yeah. No way. They'll send us to jail first.
Yeah, I agree.
They'll say, okay, you entertain the inmates for another 20 years. Yeah. Then we'll see if we can send you to Australia.
I mean, they're very picky about it. If you make a video which is supporting a good cause, there are times when politicians tweet about it and they will share your video if they like something. But I don't think that government state funding is... I don't see state funding coming for at least a couple of years.
But thankfully, everything that we've achieved so far has been on our own and with the help of a lot of brands. So corporate India is huge. They have deep pockets. So I see a cultural exchange happening from there. So we've come here now. We've seen how crazy it's been. And we have comedians in India who are willing to fly themselves down to other festivals and participate. So that cultural exchange will happen with or without the support of the government. Mm-hmm.
Maybe on the flip side, the thing is, if they do support us, we would worry about it because they would want to censor it somewhere.
Yeah, I can't. That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. The level of censorship that now exists in Bollywood, which is the biggest in terms industry. Of the taxes that Bollywood pays to the government right now. And with the level of censorship that exists over there, I can't even imagine what they will say when it comes to stand up being positioned as an export,
state funded
export from India. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, Trump will have to win the election again before our government says anything. Hang on, let's see if there's something here. No, but the cultural exchange will happen.
Will happen. Mm. Yeah.
I had a question about ethnic stereotypes.
Yeah.
So historically. I've been in Australia for about 14 years now. I'm from Delhi. Go Delhi. So there's the Sadarji joke or, you know, things in that vein. Is that a rich area of Indian stand-up comedy? I mean, cultural stereotypes and so on?
Look, I know people talk down about stereotypes now, but to me, look, I don't think that they exclude you. I think they include you because the fact is, they in my head, stereotypes are celebrating a uniqueness of a community rather than poking fun at them. And they are born out of truth somewhere. So instead of taking offense, I think people should just kind of applaud and take, we were mentioned.
Yeah, and I think what's working back home in India right now is, for example, in terms of stereotypes of the Sikh community, the Sardarjis, there are Sardar comedians in India.
Yeah.
And they do those jokes. So I think now I think comedians have developed that sensibility about what they can and cannot say. I wouldn't do a joke about being a Sardar because I'm not. One.
Shocking.
So that in that sense, the stereotypes exist, but on a very minimal level. And the ones that do, wherever any material that includes stereotype is largely, correct me if I'm wrong, is punching up and not punching down. So
I think we're going to have to leave it there. I think that we've had such a fascinating investigation of where this industry is in India. And I have to thank you all, Sapan, Neeti and Daniel, for your time today. Let's give them a
big round of applause. Thank you for coming out, guys. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Wheeler Centre podcast. Don't forget to visit wheelercentre.com for the best in books, writing and ideas from Melbourne, Australia and the world.